Welcome to a traffic engineered version of Software Gone Wild. I'm Ivan Pepelniak, usually blogging at ipspace.net, and my co-host for today is Bob McCouch, well known to our listeners. Bob, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ivan. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you. Late in the afternoon, loads of SDN thingies to be taught during the last 3 weeks, so I'm a bit tired, but I'm really excited about what we are going to be talking about today. And how are you doing?
I'm doing really good. I've been quite busy lately. I'm hoping to get out on a camping trip with the family this weekend, but we've got a hurricane bearing down on us from the south coming up toward my region, so it remains to be seen whether we'll get out camping.
So it's still warm enough for camping, or are you so tough? Because over here, it's freezing cold.
Oh, no, we have a camper.
Okay. And with us today is Julian Lucek from Juniper. And Julian, what are you doing at Juniper?
Hi, Ivan. I'm a distinguished systems engineer at Juniper. So my main technical interests are routing protocols, MPLS, traffic engineering, optical integration, and as of recently, PCEs and traffic engineering controllers, which is the topic for today, of course.
So, what traffic engineering controller are we going to be talking about?
Right, it's called North Star. So this is a controller that we've been shipping for more than 6 months now. And it's a central controller for the wide area network. And one of the key points about it is that it's coupled, you know, to the live network. So it's an online controller as opposed to an offline planning type of tool. And it can receive inputs from three main sources. First of all, the network itself. So it can see the topology of the network and link attributes. And it can see LSPs that exist in the network. And also it receives inputs from a human operator via the GUI. And also requests via a northbound REST API. And on the basis of these inputs, it makes decisions about the placement of TE LSPs across the network. And so it can modify existing LSPs, and it can actually create completely new LSPs from scratch.
Okay, let's go down the list of what you just mentioned. First thing you need, obviously, is to know the network topology. How does that work?
Right. So the traditional way of giving a central entity knowledge of the network topology is via IGP peering. So you set up OSPF or IS adjacencies with routers in the network. That's fine, although it gets messy if you have a multi-area network, because then you'll need adjacencies into each IGP area. If the controller's not physically connected to each of those areas, that means having to set up GRE tunnels and running the IGP over those GRE tunnels. So doable, but a bit messy. An alternative way, which has emerged recently, is BGP LS, which stands for BGP link state. And that's a means by which a router can export the contents of its traffic engineering database, which has been populated by IGP traffic engineering extensions, into BGP. And so there's a new address family that's been defined for the purpose. And so in BGP is carried node attributes and link attributes related to traffic engineering information. And so, for example, in the case of link attributes, that would include the metric of the link, the maximum amount of reservable bandwidth, how much bandwidth there is to reserve at each of the 8 priority levels, SRLG information, link attributes in terms of admin groups or colors, as they're sometimes known. And so all
or
of that
affinity
is...
Affinity bits, right?
Yes, correct. So all of that is carried in BGPLS. Now, the good thing is that you can use BGPLS between different regions in the network. So one way of implementing it is that you could have a root reflector or a pair of root reflectors for resilience, having BGPLS peerings into each of the IGP areas, and then have peerings also with the North Star controller. Or the North Star controller could have BGPLS sessions into each domain if you preferred. And so it's a very convenient way of having real-time knowledge of the topology of an entire network, which could consist of multiple areas, without having to have the messiness of setting up GRE tunnels in order to accommodate IGP adjacencies into each individual area.
And eventually, when you get to the network being totally controlled by the controller, it also gets rid of the messy inter-area traffic engineering setup with loose source routing, right?
That's correct. The controller, having been given full visibility of the topology and link attributes of each of the individual areas, can then use all of this information to successfully set up LSPs across multiple areas. So path diversity across multiple areas is no problem, or any type of LSP can be set up across multiple areas as would normally be set up across a single area.
Now, you mentioned BGP-LS. Isn't that a pretty new thing?
It's been around for about maybe 3 or 4 years in terms of drafts, and probably a couple of years in terms of implementation. So it's, you know, something that's now, you know, available in recent code on, you know, most vendors' routers.
So it's not just a Juniper thingy.
Correct. It's standards based, so it's defined by IETF drafts. And in fact, there was some interop tests last year between different vendors. It's known to interoperate between different vendors. And also, there was a implementation draft which discussed the fact that, you know, interop has been tested, which was published in the IETF some months ago.
So how is the controller packaged? Is this software that runs on a routing platform? Is this a separate you know, software stack that runs within a service provider's infrastructure? What's that look
right.
like?
Right, yes, that's a good question. It's supplied as software which the operator can then install on an x86 platform. And so, you know, we don't supply it as an appliance because people just prefer to install it on their own machines. And so, you know, it's quite a convenient way of, you know, having such a controller.
And as long as it runs on x86, we can call it software defined then, right?
That's true, yes.
For some definition of software defined, yes. You also mentioned when we were talking about topology that this controller could actually join an ISIS or OSPF domain as a router.
As a IGP speaker, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed, yes, to absorb you know, topology information, yes.
Are people actually doing that?
I guess one use case for it is if you know, BGP-LS isn't supported by the code version that people are running. But in the main, BGP-LS seems to be the preferred one. So that's the one that we see used most often for sure.
One minor detail. You mentioned that you get everything from OSPF topology database into BGP-LS. So is BGP-LS cooking the OSPF data in any way, or is it just a raw dump of LSAs or LSPs through BGP messages?
It's essentially one mode of operation is that you could regard it as such. So you could, you know, take, you know, in effect, the full contents of the traffic engineering database and export it. I mean, if you wanted to, you could, you know, filter because each entry is an LNRI, so you could filter on it if you wanted to. Although in, you know, most cases that we've seen, there's no sort of motivation to do that. So in effect, what's wanted is to have the full topology, you know, exposed to the controller, so it's aware of, you know, all of the links that exist and all of the possibilities.
So it's exactly the same as the controller joining an OSPF area, just being delivered in a different format.
Yes, in terms of the information that it receives, yes, it's very true, yes.
So now we have the topology. What can we do with it?
Right. So knowing the topology and knowing all of the attributes, that means that the controller can set up LSPs. And for example, if somebody wants a pair of diverse LSPs, and that's a more advanced use case, usually the requirement of that is that you need one LSP going from PE1 to PE3, which must be diverse from another one going from PE2 to PE4. And so the controller knows the topology of the network. It knows the bandwidth availability of each link. And so if there's a bandwidth requirement for each of those two LSPs, it can take that into account. And so then it can perform a diverse path computation. And if SRLGs have been configured on links, then those will have been exposed either via the IGP, if it's using IGP peering, or BGPLS, if it's doing BGPLS peering. And so it can successfully compute a pair of disjoint paths with its knowledge of the topology.
And so the controller then basically has full knowledge of all of the LSPs across the network for comparison purposes and for, I guess, you know, inventory pretty much, right?
Yes, yes. In fact, you could have three different types of LSP coexisting on the network if you wanted to, and all of those would be visible to the controller. So the first type is what I call a vanilla LSP. And so this is one that's been configured on the ingress router, and the ingress router has computed the path and signaled it via RSVP. Now, the PSEP protocol allows the ingress router to actually report the existence of that LSP to the controller. So even though in the case of this particular type of LSP, the controller may not modify the LSP, it's useful to have it exposed to the controller, for example, for visualization purposes. The operator can see the path that the LSP takes in the GUI of the controller, can see how much bandwidth has been reserved by that LSP, and so on. A second type of LSP is a delegated LSP. Again, this is one that is configured on the ingress router, and the ingress router sets up the LSP via RSVP signaling. But then, having delegated it to the controller is authorized to make changes. And so the controller can change the bandwidth reservation of the LSP if needed. It can change the path of the LSP if needed as well. And then the third type of LSP is one that's actually initiated by the controller itself. And so the trigger for that could be the human operator making a request via the GUI, a request via the northbound API. And so the first that the ingress router knows about this LSP is a request sent via the PSEP protocol saying, here are the details of an LSP that I want you to set up, including the name of the LSP, the full path that the LSP must follow, the bandwidth reservation if needed. And then that in turn triggers the ingress router to set up that LSP via RSVP signaling through the network.
Now, you mentioned PCEP a few times, and we haven't explained what that is, so let's fix that.
Yes, that's a good idea. So it stands for Path Computation Element Protocol. And so in the protocol model, you have, on the one hand, the PCE, which stands for Path Computation Element, and that's the central controller that's responsible for computing the paths of LSPs. And then, on the other hand, you have what's known as the PCC, which stands for Path Computation Client. And the PCCs are the ingress routers of the various LSPs. And so the PSEP protocol is the communications channel between the PCE, the controller, and each of the ingress routers. And so one way in which it can be used is to set up LSPs completely from scratch, as we described, can also be used to modify existing LSPs. And also in the reverse direction, which is very important, it's a useful reporting protocol. And so that's the way that the controller becomes aware of, for example, the vanilla LSPs that I mentioned. The vanilla LSPs were set up by the individual ingress routers, but then reported, their existence is reported via PSEP to the controller.
So you could have a mixed mode network where some tunnels are established, well, configured manually on the routers, and other tunnels are requested by the operator and then computed by the central controller and pushed down to the routers. How do you prevent the routers and the controller from stepping on each other's toes?
Right. That would be somewhat analogous to how it works for distributed path computation. So with distributed path computation, potentially you could have race conditions where one router sets up an LSP in terms of, you know, computing its path and then hands it over to RSVP for signaling. Perhaps, you know, by the time the RSVP message reaches one of the transit routers, another LSP has been set up from a different ingress router, which has used the resources that we were hoping to use for the LSP that failed. What happens then is that an RSVP message goes back to the ingress router of the LSP that it wasn't possible to have set up, and that would trigger it to redo the path computation and try another path. So by analogy with that, when there's a central controller involved, if there's an LSP that the controller asks a particular ingress router to set up, again, if it's not possible to set up, if it fails due to a race condition, RSVP message goes back to the ingress router, and that in turn would trigger a corresponding PSEP message, which would go to the controller. And so the controller would know that it wasn't possible to set up that particular LSP, and so it would redo the path computation and try a different path. And so in that way, you can have successful coexistence, you know, between distributed path computation LSPs and centrally computed LSPs. One way in which somebody might have a mixed mode of operation is that they might have LSPs that don't have any particular special requirements set up on individual ingress routers in a normal way, but LSPs that have special requirements that the controller can deal with are computed by the controller. For example, LSPs where path diversity is required, which is a very difficult problem to solve with distributed path computation, or LSPs that are computed according to different cost metrics, such as latency rather than IGP metric for a sort of premium service where somebody wants the minimum possible latency LSP.
This sounds like a software-defined WAN for service providers.
Yes, exactly. So it's very much aimed at the wide area network. So sort of optimizing the way LSPs are set up across the wide area network, setting up LSPs according to particular service requirements. And so service providers, you know, very much, you know, a key market for it. And also large enterprises. Nowadays, we're seeing that large enterprise customers often have their own private global MPLS networks, and they're almost run as a sort of service provider model in the sense that the organization within that enterprise that runs the global MPLS network is acting as a service to different departments. So different departments can buy, inverted commas, you know, VPN services, for example, on that network to meet their, you know, particular department's requirements. And so we see quite a lot of traffic engineering in global enterprise networks as well as in actual service provider networks nowadays.
So the primary customers for this controller would then be people who have large WAN networks where they own at least layer 2 links, so that reserving bandwidth actually makes sense, right?
Indeed, yes. So it needs to be an operator that, you know, does have ownership of those, you know, links, you know, at layer 2. So, you know, has control over the way traffic flows across the network in terms of the sequence of hops that it follows across various routers. Yes, absolutely.
So the PSEP protocol that's responsible for providing communication between all of the PE's network infrastructure and the controller, is that a Juniper Networks invention, or is that standards-based?
PSEP is standards-based. So it's something that started life in the IETF in the mid-2000s. Now, initially, the sort of main model that was sort of looked at was a sort of stateless PCE, as it's known. So this is one where the ingress router has an LSP that it needs help with computing the path of. And so it communicates via PSEP to the PCE saying, you know, I want a path from A to B, 50 megabits per second of bandwidth is required, please compute the path. And the PCE computes the path and then sends the result to the ingress router via PSEP. And then the PCE promptly forgets all about that LSP. It doesn't retain any knowledge of that LSP, so it's, you know, stateless for that reason. So
that's just a computational offload then?
Yes, yes, okay. Correct, yes.
So you would use that to solve the multi-area traffic engineering mess, right?
You could use it to solve that sort of problem indeed. So the thing that's really changed over the last couple of years, the hot topic is active stateful PCE. And the key thing about that is that it retains knowledge of the LSPs. It has knowledge of the LSPs, you know, through PSEP reporting. It knows the requirements of LSPs that it has set up, and it keeps track of those and can modify LSPs accordingly. And so that's a completely different model. That's much more aligned with the sort of SDN you know, paradigm. So by way of example, if you ask the controller to set up a pair of diverse LSPs, it remembers the fact that they must be diverse. If the topology of the network changes that affects one of those LSPs, it recomputes the path of that LSP, bearing in mind its knowledge that it must be diverse from the other LSP still. And so it's that sort of statefulness that makes, you know, such a controller much more useful for practical purposes.
But the controller is only doing the path computation, right? It's not modifying the label table in the intermediate routers, for example.
Correct. So RSVP is still used to signal the LSP. So in the distributed model, distributed traffic engineering model, the ingress router uses CSPF to compute the path, and then it hands it over to RSVP to signal it through the network. So RSVP messages traveling from ingress to egress are what sets up the actual path and distributes the labels, as you mentioned. In the case of a centralized controller, the controller is now doing the path computation, passing details of the path to the ingress router via PSEP, and then in turn that triggers RSVP on the ingress router to you know, send the RSVP path setup messages. So from the network point of view, if you are looking on the transit router, an LSP would be distinguishable in terms of whether it had actually originated from a CSPF computation on the ingress router or a computation on a central controller.
Now, how would this play with segment routing?
Right. So with that, that's an alternative way of having a path, you know, that follows you know, a particular sequence of hops through the network. So from the point of view of the path computation, that's, you know, equivalent. So on the controller, it can be computing the path in the same way. The only difference is that on receiving the PSEP message, the ingress router would be installing a corresponding label stack in the FIB rather than triggering RSVP to set up the path. And indeed, there's PSEP extensions for segment routing slash Spring to enable that to happen. So rather than PSEP conveying an LSP that's to be set up via RSVP, it conveys an, you know, a path to be set up using the, you know, Spring segment routing mechanisms.
But then you don't know anything about the bandwidth reservations in the network, right?
That's correct. So in that case, there wouldn't be a bandwidth reservation at the network layer. So the controller would need to keep track of the bandwidth reservations in its own mind. So, you know, an LSP in the mind of the controller might have, you know, 50 megabits per second of bandwidth allocated to it, and so it decrements that bandwidth in its mind from each of the links that that LSP is using. But at the network layer, you wouldn't have a corresponding bandwidth reservation, and so for that reason, it'd be more difficult to have a, you know, mixed mode of operation like we were discussing earlier, where you'd have a mixture of distributed and centrally computed LSPs. You could do it if the distributed LSPs don't need a bandwidth reservation, if they're, you know, sort of LSPs that are created for some other reason rather than bandwidth reservation.
Yeah, like fast reroute, for example, right?
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Now, you said the controller keeps in mind where the tunnels are. What happens if the controller crashes? What happens to those tunnels?
Right. So there's, different cases to consider. So if it's an LSP that was delegated, so it's an LSP that had been configured on the ingress router and delegated to the controller, and what happens is that the ingress router takes back control. And so that happens in a seamless way. So the LSP is, you know, still up and running during this process, and, you know, control's now back with the, you know, with the ingress router. Now, in the case of initiated LSPs, when I say initiated, I mean initiated by the controller, then those are ephemeral. So they don't exist in the configuration file of the ingress router. Now, if the controller, you know, is now not present, I mean, those LSPs would still stay up, and there's a timer that determines how long they stay up. Having said that, you know, if there's a topology change in the network that, for example, is a link that goes down along the path of such an LSP, then that LSP would then go down. So for that reason, having redundancy of controllers is, you know, very important, especially for the PCE-initiated case. Yes, so I was going to say that with that, you'd have a redundant controller that has knowledge from the other controller of the requirements of all the LSPs. So, you know, all of the LSP states would be replicated across the two controllers. And so in that way, the other controller can take control in a seamless way, you know, if the first one should crash, as you said.
So in the worst case that we lose the controller, the tunnels stay up as long as there is no topology change in the network.
Correct, yes.
And if we get a topology change, the manually configured tunnels can obviously be recomputed and resignaled. But for the PCE signal tunnels, the router doesn't have enough information to do CSPF for them. So it has nothing, it cannot do anything else but to drop them.
In the case of the PCE initiated, that's correct. In the case of the PCE delegated ones, then because there's configuration on the ingress router, the, you know, router, you know, knows enough to recompute if there's a topology change.
Yeah, but I guess you strongly recommend the customers to use two controllers, right?
Oh, indeed, yes. Oh, absolutely. Because in the delegated case, even if they are delegated, there might be requirements that are only known to the controller, because you could have a situation where you have a pair of LSPs that have been delegated, and on the controller is configured a requirement such as path diversity. So the controller is the one who knows that these LSPs must be diverse and not the respective ingress routers. So that type of information, you know, would be retained, you know, if you've got the redundant controller. So certainly, yes, redundant controllers are, you know, very useful and important.
The other thing you mentioned was obviously bandwidth reservation. And we know that guesstimating the right amount of bandwidth a tunnel needs is hard, unless, of course, you reserve what the customer has been paying for. So if you don't have that contract with the customer saying, I need this much bandwidth for this virtual circuit, how does the bandwidth estimation work with PCEP?
Right. So we have a scheme where, rather than having a fixed bandwidth reservation for an LSP, you can have one that changes in accordance with changing traffic levels. And so it's somewhat analogous to auto bandwidth that exists with distributed traffic engineering. So what the ingress router is doing is measuring how much traffic is actually traveling into an LSP. And if you want to have this dynamic mode of operation, it actually reports via PSEP to the central controller the traffic level on the LSP. And so with that, the controller can make decisions accordingly. So suppose we have an LSP that currently is carrying 500 megs of traffic. It's following a particular path. And then the traffic goes up to 750 megs. The ingress router reports that fact to the controller, and then the controller reassesses the path. And so either the current path is still fine, or perhaps if the current path can't sustain that volume of traffic, the controller recomputes the path and finds one that can, in fact, you know, sustain that amount of traffic. So that's a very useful mode of operation where the controller is reacting to dynamic traffic conditions rather than, you know, just relying on a sort of fixed bandwidth value. In fact, we've taken things a step further with that, where you could arrive at a situation where, you know, a given LSP becomes hard to place across the network as a single LSP because of, you know, a large amount of traffic going from router A to router B across the network. And so what we've introduced is something called dynamic LSP splitting, where multiple LSPs can be created between A and B in order to spread the traffic along different paths in the network. And so the controller would be computing the paths of those individual sub LSPs in order to you know, be able to spread the traffic around the network successfully. And we've seen cases, this is with distributed path computation in the past, where some operators have up to 30 LSPs in parallel going between, you know, points A and points B on the other side of the network, just in order to achieve more efficient bin packing of the links across the core and be able to carry, you know, a huge volume of traffic between those two points. The way they've been doing that in the past is manually configuring individual LSPs in the CLI of, you know, router A and router B in the other direction. So this takes out a lot of that manual work, actually, you know, bringing up additional sub LSPs in this set of LSPs automatically, and conversely, removing them when no longer needed, you know, according to how the traffic grows and then falls back down again.
So they were doing like 30-way ECMP across 30 parallel tunnels.
Correct, yes, in the most extreme case, yes, so between the two.
And all of that was manually configured, probably with explicit routes.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be manually configured, you know, because, you know, you can have auto bandwidth on those individual LSPs and they sort of find their way across the network, you know, where the bandwidth's available. But, you know, certainly it's, you know, more manual work, you know, sort of, you know, configuring these LSPs, you know, as they are needed. So having the controller do the job and, you know, compute the LSPs is certainly much more convenient.
By the way, one detail still sort of evades me. So you create the tunnel from the controller. How does the router know what traffic to push into that tunnel? Do you use autoroute?
Right. So the traffic would be actually, you know, mapped via normal route resolution procedures. So, you know, traffic would resolve over it and use the tunnel. If you want to have, you know, selective behavior where, you know, particular traffic uses one tunnel and other traffic uses another tunnel. So perhaps you might have multiple tunnels between points A and B across the network and you want some VPNs to use one tunnel, which perhaps is a low latency path, and another one is used by other VPNs, which is perhaps a lower cost path in terms of monetary cost, you know, which is carrying bulk traffic that doesn't have particular latency requirements. Then, you know, routers have ways of achieving that using, you know, policies to do those mappings. Now, PSEP as it stands doesn't really have a means to convey those policies. So the way we do it is by having templates. And so you can have templates on the router that define the policies. And by having a match on the LSP name, by having a regular expression map on attributes of the LSP name, which is handed down via PSEP, you can perform that mapping as desired.
Ah, so you configure templates on the ingress routers, and then the operator says, I need a new LSP with this particular name, And the controller computes the path, signals the tunnel down to the ingress PE router, and the ingress PE router says, oh, I have a template with that matches this LSP name, so let's apply this template to this new dynamic tunnel.
Yes, indeed. So, for example, if it's a low-latency LSP and there's certain traffic that must use the low-latency LSP, you could have a template that says, if the name of the LSP starts with LL star, you know, where LL stands for low latency, then, you know, that traffic will map onto that type of LSP. That's exactly right.
That's cool.
Yep. Yeah, it's very good.
Okay, so let's say I want to use this magic controller of yours. I could use it as an operator tool so that an operator would use the GUI to signal LSPs across the network. But how would I integrate that with, let's say, my orchestration system?
Right. So there is a northbound REST API. And so with that, one can either request information from the controller. So you can request details of the topology of the network. And so all of the link attributes that were learnt via BGPLS can be exposed via this REST API. Details of existing LSPs, all of their attributes in terms of full details of their paths, their bandwidth reservation, their current status, admin up, live up, and so on. All of that's conveyed via the API. And then in the opposite direction, external entities can make requests. And so they can actually request for LSPs to be set up with particular attributes, such as bandwidth requirements, path diversity requirements, and so on. And so what you have is a flow through the system where, you know, information that's passed across the REST API is absorbed by the controller. That drives path computation requests. In turn, that drives PSEP messages going to the ingress routers, which in turn triggers RSVP messages going across the network to actually set up the LSPs at the network layer.
So you could use this to build something like AT&T is claiming to have, where the customer through an online portal says, I need this much bandwidth between A and B, and it magically happens.
Yes, that's correct. Yes, indeed. So you could have that type of paradigm where, you know, LSPs are set up according to customer requirements. It has bandwidth calendaring as well, so you can request an LSP to be set up not now, but at a particular time and date in the future. You can have it conversely torn down at some future time as well. You can even define a bandwidth profile, so you can say this LSP will start at 3 a.m. tomorrow morning with 100 megabits per second of bandwidth, and at 6 a.m. I want it to have 200 megabits per second, and so on. So you define the profile as a function of time and pass that to the controller.
Ah, so you can actually provision an LSP in the future, and then at that time the controller would calculate where to place the LSP and signal it down through PCEP.
Yes, absolutely. That's correct.
That's convenient.
Yep. That's very popular in the broadcast TV industry, where a lot of bandwidth calendaring's used, in fact.
So if I'm one of those customers that could actually benefit from this beast, where can I learn more?
Right. So on our website, we have full documentation. And so the easiest way is to go to www.juniper.net, type in Northstar in the search engine, and that will have links to data sheets and also full product documentation. And people who are interested in actually trying it out, doing a trial in their labs, they can download the software for the controller from our website and then contact us in order to receive a license key for trialing it.
Ah, so I can download the stuff, install it and everything, but before I can run it, I need the license key.
Correct. That's right. Yes.
And the license key is probably time limited, or is it also functionality limited?
For trials, it's time limited, but not functionality limited, actually. You know, does the full capability of the controller, even with the trial license key.
And is there a procedure to request the license key, or is it just talk to your friendly SE?
basically, people should contact their account team. That's correct. Yes. Yeah. And they'll take it from there. That's right.
Now, if people have more questions about this, where can they find you? How can they follow you online?
Right. The best way is LinkedIn. So I use that to send interesting updates. So sometimes I write blogs. I've written a couple of blogs on our sort of external blogging sites about North Star. And so when I do that, I send a LinkedIn update to sort of advertise the fact that I've, you know, just posted such a blog.
So follow you on LinkedIn and not on Twitter.
Yes, that's correct.
That's an interesting approach.
Yep, yep. It does the job.
Julian, thank you for being with us. Thank you for this intro to North Star Controller. And I hope we'll find time in the future to do a deeper dive into either BGP LS or PCE.
Yes, that'd be really great. So, yeah, thank you very much, Ivan and Bob. Really enjoyed speaking to you both.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
And Bob, where can people find you?
Well, you can usually find me on Twitter as @BobMcCouch, and I also blog at herdingpackets.net. Although I'm thinking for the next hour or so, I'm just going to have to go lay down. My enterprise brain is overwhelmed with all the service provider talk.
Oh, no, it wasn't that bad. We could go down the affinity bits, for example. Thank you for being with us today, Bob.
My pleasure, as always.
And I'm Ivan Pepelniak, and you can find me at ipspace.net, where I blog, do webinars, rant about the state of the networking industry, as you well know, and occasionally record a podcast. If you want to find more podcasts, just go to podcast.ipspace.net, where you'll find this podcast feed, and you can subscribe to it, obviously, as well as other free videos and podcasts that I occasionally release. And by the way, if you want to know more about SDN, because after all, this is an SDN podcast, go to sdn.ipspace.net, where you'll find links to sponsored webinars, free webinars, paid webinars, SDN workshops. By the way, there is one coming up in Miami in November. So I hope you'll find that interesting, and I'll see you in Miami.